Lemonada.
So, I spent a lot of my childhood in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, in a neighborhood that was filled with all of these amazingly creative kids. Like, I'm not kidding, for real creative. For example, one of them was Margaret Edson, who went on to win a Pulitzer Prize for the play Wit. Yes, I shit you not. We played all kinds of make-believe games all of the time on our street. And by the time I was 9 or 10, I'd already decided to be an actress. It was around that time that we kids started a proper theater company. I mean, you know, we thought it was a proper theater company. We called it the University Players. We liked that name because it conveyed a certain gravitas upon our group of six or seven elementary school performers with absolutely no experience of any kind. One of the first shows in our extensive repertoire was a production of Sorry Wrong Number, which was a super scary murder thriller. Okay, we charged our parents $1 to come down to their own basement to see the premiere performance, and I gotta tell you, it was a magnificent show. I played Mrs. Stevenson, the lead role that was originated by Barbara Stanwyck in the movie for you film buffs out there. And I believe that in every way, I outshone Ms. Stanwyck. At least that's how I remember it. So, opening night, which was also closing night, the show was going great until my five-year-old neighbor, Michael, who was playing one of the exceptionally scary murderers, he messed up a line. And as an actress, of course, I was completely professional. I held it together. But as a producer of this production, I was livid. I was absolutely furious. Still, other than Michael's massive fuck up, it was perfection. We were very dedicated thespians, and I loved it so much. So much that I really never stopped performing. Back then, you know, performance was just an element of our playing. Everything was make-believe. We lived across the street from American University in D.C., and so our little pack of 9 and 10-year-olds used to wander the campus pretending to be college kids. We would really get lost in pretending to be sophisticated co-eds. I would wear my, I had this suede vest with fringe, which I thought was totally collegiate. It was, by the way, and which I wish I still had. I adore fringe. I always will. I never will stop adoring fringe. It's timeless. We go to the student center, we drink hot chocolate, pretending it was coffee, because that's what college students drink, obviously. And we would lean on walls. You know how college students always lean on something. And we would throw our heads back, pretending to laugh at really collegey jokes, you know, so thrilling. I've always loved to pretend to be somebody else, especially somebody older. It was a route to a kind of control over my life that I really didn't have yet and that I really, really wanted. We started other performance companies on that street too, by the way, including a modern dance troupe called Julia and the Umbrella People, in which Michael redeemed himself. You'll be happy to hear. He was truly a wonderful dancer. Tragically, there's no video of any of this, but I remember all of it vividly. I remember the absolute transporting joy of imaginary play. I remember the singular focus of these performances. And here's the thing. I get almost exactly the same feeling when I work now. Almost exactly. It's weird, except it's not weird. And so today, I am thrilled to be speaking to another professional make-believer, actress Rhea Perlman. Hi, I'm Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and this is Wiser Than Me, a podcast where I get schooled by women who are wiser than me. I love my family and my friends. I like my exercise. I like to shop a little. But the truth is, I really love to work. I do. I just love it. So I am totally psyched to hang out with our guest today. because she just works and works and works. Over 50 years, she's amassed like 117 credits. Okay, do you know how much work 117 credits is? Do you know how long 50 years is? She did what, like 1,000 seasons of Cheers alone? That's probably as funny a show, joke to joke to joke, as anything ever broadcast. Also, I thought a lot of people watched the Seinfeld finale with 76 million people, but guess what? Joke's on me, because 93 million freaking people watched the Cheers finale. I mean, that's almost 40% of the U.S. population at the time, and that was just a start. She's still working. She's in the Mindy Project. She made the Matilda movie. She's in the Barbie movie that Greta Gerwig is doing, which looks like tons of fun. And she made a Netflix movie this year that I'm in too. And somehow she balances all of that excellent work with three grown-up kids and one grown-up marriage or not, and other real shit like writing books. And she can honestly say, I'm from Coney Island. I wish I could say that. I am profoundly excited to welcome a phenomenal actress, mother, author, and someone who is most definitely wiser than me, Rhea Perlman. How about that?
Thank you, Julia. That was quite the intro, really.
It was
really
quite the intro. It took forever.
Yeah. You know what I was going to call this show?
Tell me.
Old Broads in the Business. That's how
okay,
I feel.
That's fine. All right, fine. I love that. Speaking of which, are you comfortable saying your age?
Sure. So it's all over the place.
How old are you?
I am 75.
Fantastic. Congratulations. And how old do you feel?
75. Well, when I have to do something technical like this,
yes,
Zoom like this,
yes,
I feel 75. But in general,
got it.
I feel maybe 40.
Yeah. What do you think is the best part about being 75?
Oh, geez.
I know. Is there anything? There's got to be something that's, well, actually, I have a feeling I know what it might be.
Yeah. Well, the best part is that my children have grown and that one of them had a grandchild. So that didn't happen before I was 75. It just happened 7 weeks ago. It's amazing. It's amazing. I mean, everybody said it'll change your life when you have a grandchild. And it does.
It does? Can you describe how it does? I'm dying to hear.
There's a certain love. I mean, I felt it when my own children were born.
Of course.
The kind of love I had never felt before for anything. And I had felt love, you know, for my husband, for my other people in my family, for a boyfriend here and there, whatever. But it was a profound kind of feeling. And there it is again, you know. It's just, they can do no wrong. It's like looking at a new human being. A new human being. It's so amazing that people create other people.
I mean, mind-boggling, isn't it?
It is. It's mind-boggling.
What's your granddaughter's name?
Sinclair.
Oh, what a fabulous name.
Sinclair Lucille DeVito. They kept the name DeVito, even though she's married. And her husband's name is not DeVito, but that's what they chose.
That's a beautiful name.
Yeah, it is.
Are you spending a lot of time with her?
I am spending a considerable amount of time. I'm trying to not get in their face every day, but we live pretty close together. I live in the east side of LA, and so do they. And so it's an easy, 10-minute drive.
Right. And what are they called? What do you want to be called now that you're a grandmother?
Grandma Riri, or just Riri.
That's very good. I called my grandmother Grandma Didi.
Oh, there you go.
Grandma Didi. And by the way, her name was Grace. My grandmother's name was Grace.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. I love the name Grace. Yeah. In fact, if we had a daughter, we would have named her Grace. I think it's a beautiful name.
Yeah.
And what do you think, what is like, if you can say at this point, because you're 7 weeks in, but into being a grandma, but what do you think is the most important advice you could give your children about being a parent? Yeah, I know.
Well, I would say be there for them for any situation that they need you for. Be there for them when you want to be, but don't overwhelm them. And you know, there's no room for impatience. I mean, you have to have impatience. Sometimes you're going to be impatient, but they have a night nurse, which is a good thing. And I wish I had had one.
A night nurse is a game changer because if you can get more than 5 hours of sleep in a row.
Yeah.
Well, that is just incredibly exciting because I remember when we were on, when we made You People, and I was asking you about your family, and you said to me, and you told me that you had three kids, and you said, but I'm not a grandmother yet.
Right.
And now here we are, and you're a grandmother. It's so fantastic.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I love it. I know that we work together on You People, but do you know that we worked together 40 years ago? And
we
that
did.
I had for, yeah, we did. Because you and Danny hosted SNL and I was in the cast. It was my first season on the show.
No way.
Yes way. Yes.
Oh my God. You know, I had such, I was so terrified doing that show.
You were?
I never rewatched it. Because,
oh my God,
I, in general, I don't like watching my stuff on after I've done it. But after a while, I'm okay with it. You know, now
right.
I come across Cheers episodes, I watch them, you know.
Right.
But that particular, I didn't really understand the workings of the whole thing. And it's so fast.
Yeah. It's like being in a rocket ship and it just is soaring through the week.
Yeah.
So we've been working together a long time now, Rhea.
Yes, we have.
Yes. Yeah.
Let's continue on.
Yes. When you were a kid, did you want to be an actor?
Not when I was little. No.
When did you get bit?
I got bit sometime at the end of junior high school. I guess you'd call it middle school now. I was always very, very shy. Right. Didn't say much. And except with my friends. I knew I was could be a total goofball with my friends.
Yeah.
You know, but, and they were, well, there was a talent show and I decided to do a Ricky Ricardo impression playing the bongos and singing Babaloo in front of an entire assembly of people. It was a huge school. And I did that. And people like went crazy. They thought it was hysterical. And so that was my bug. That was the bug.
I love that you made the choice of doing Ricky Ricardo and not Lucy Ricardo. That is so fabulous. That is such a good choice. I'd do anything to be able to see you do that back in the day. That's incredible.
I'd kind of wish I could see it myself.
We'll get more wisdom from Rhea Perlman after this break. Stay tuned. This episode of Wiser Than Me is brought to you by Maker's Mark. You may not know that Maker's Mark co-founder Margie Samuels was the designer behind the original label. And now, in honor of Women's History Month, Maker's Mark has partnered with the talented artist Gail Kabaker to hand-paint a beautiful label, which you can personalize with the name of a wise woman you know, someone who has made an impact on you or in their community. I'm so happy to be here at Lemonada Media, which is women-founded and women-led, an excellent example of what a community of women can do when we come together. We'd like to salute this whole network of strong women, especially the staff of Wiser Than Me, who are mostly women, by the way. So come join in on the fun. This month, order a free label and let a wise woman in your life know just how special she is to you. Head to makersmark.com/personalize, fill in the details, and then shout out the woman you know who is making a difference. Maker's Mark makes their bourbon carefully, so please enjoy it that way. Maker's Mark Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey, 45% alcohol by volume. Copyright 2024 Maker's Mark Distillery, Incorporated, Loretto, Kentucky. We all need sleep, right? There are very few things we should prioritize more than a good night's rest. But did you know that 35% of adults find themselves struggling with the quality of their sleep? And what you might not know is that something as simple as your bedding can play a pivotal role in transforming your entire sleep experience. elevating it from sleep to true rest. That's where Cozy Earth steps in. Cozy Earth offers bedding products that will transform your sleep. Apart from being the softest sheets you've ever tried, Cozy Earth sheets are also temperature regulating. That's a huge draw for anyone who runs hot or cold when they sleep. That means you won't overheat or shiver while still experiencing the superior softness of the sheets. They choose their fabrics and weaves meticulously. You need to feel it to believe it. Choosing Cozy Earth sheets and pajamas will make going to bed suddenly feel like self-care, letting you experience what unparalleled rest and comfort feels like. Plus, Cozy Earth extends a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. That's a decade of assured comfort and support. And definitely check out their sheet sets if you're looking for a thoughtful gift that your loved ones will be raving about. Treat yourself to the ultimate in comfort and indulgence with Cozy Earth bedding and sleepwear, and prioritize your self-care and sleep health. Use promo code WISER at checkout for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. After you place your order, be sure to let them know we sent you. Select podcast in the survey and be sure to write in WISER than me. That's CozyEarth.com, promo code WISER. When planning a trip, the journey there and back is always top of mind. It's so important to feel de-stressed, especially when you're on your way home afterwards and maybe a little tired and homesick. Oftentimes, we think about the destination, but half of the traveling is done when heading back home. And of course, you want to feel as comfortable and settled as possible during the journey, even before you set foot back in your space. That's why we're so thrilled to be talking about Delta Airlines today. For most travelers, it's little touches that actually make them feel at home, and Delta Airlines knows what travelers are looking for. Each Delta Airlines flight is tailored to help you feel at ease. They offer incredible in-flight entertainment, over 1,000 hours of it, so you can sit back, relax, and lose yourself in something you've been meaning to watch anyway. You can also stay connected through fast, free Delta Sync Wi-Fi available for SkyMiles members, which always makes a flight time feel shorter, right? And how about the snack options? First of all, if you're gluten-free, you can rest easy because their snack options have you covered. And their extensive premium beverage options like herbal teas, cold brew, and sparkling wine make the flight all the more enjoyable. Plus, Delta Airlines offers more sustainable alternatives for in-flight dining like plant-based dishes, bamboo cutlery, and organic, nutrient-packed snacks. A good flight means a positive end to any trip, right? Trust Delta Airlines to make you feel comfortable and taken care of. Delta Airlines believes you should feel at home, even if you're 30,000 feet above it. Learn more at delta.com. Hi there, listeners. Just a quick note before we get back to the show. I want to tell you real quick about my new movie called You Hurt My Feelings. It's a little comedy about the little white lies we tell to the people we love the most. I play a writer who discovers that her longtime adoring husband, who said he loved her latest book, actually hates her latest book. Can you imagine that mindfuck? It was so superb to work again with Nicole Holofcener, who is the writer and director. The entire cast is truly unbelievable. I'm so proud of the damn thing. You Hurt My Feelings. It's out now in theaters everywhere. I hope you go check it out. All right, you grew up in Brooklyn in Coney Island, and that feels completely magical to me, you know, with the ocean, the boardwalk, and
the fireworks, Tuesday night.
Every Tuesday?
Every Tuesday in the summer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Just lay a, you know, blanket on the beach, and you'd lay there and look up.
I know you said in the past that your grandparents only sent the boys of the family to school, right? And not the girls, to college?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Did that mindset that your grandparents had, did that permeate into your life through your mom?
Yes, it did. My mom really resented the fact that she never got the opportunities that her brother did. She had a sister as well, but her sister didn't want the same things as she did. Mm-hmm. My mom was very smart. Mm. She read a lot, and she was just, you know, she was good in school, and she really would have benefited by continuing her education.
Yeah, she was right to resent it.
Yes, she was a bit of a feminist in that way. And she also, you know, as my sister said the other day, she said, you remember, Mom, she told, I know she told me, I don't know if she told you, that I could do anything I wanted in my life. And I don't remember hearing that specific sentence from her, but yeah, I do feel like she felt that way, that a woman should have the same opportunities as men, bar none.
But that's good she had that point of view, because even if she didn't say it directly to you, it sounds like it permeated out of her and into you to a certain extent.
Yeah, I think so.
What was your relationship like with your mother?
It was complicated. It didn't look as complicated as it was, because I didn't fight with her. My mother can be very contentious, and she doesn't give much, you know, as far as her point of view. Mm-hmm. And it was difficult for my children, say, as to have her as a grandmother sometimes, because if she said, here, let me teach you knitting, I'm very good at this, let me teach you. And if one of them said, no, I don't want to, they said, oh, sure, go be stupid, she'd say.
Oh, dear.
You know.
Not great.
No, not great. So she took everything personally. She was very defensive.
So it doesn't sound like you're going to be modeling that behavior that your mother taught you as a grandmother to your granddaughter, Sinclair.
No.
I don't see you saying, okay, yeah, go, be stupid.
Yeah.
I can't.
No,
that doesn't sound like you.
I didn't even get the feeling that she recognized when she said it, that she shouldn't have said that.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right. Okay, well, here's a parenting question, a couple of parenting questions. So you had all three of your children when you were making Cheers.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I had my two children when I was making Seinfeld.
Wow. We have a lot in common.
We have a lot in common.
Yeah.
And I know they wrote your pregnancy into the show.
Yes.
And shall we say, exaggerated the pregnancies.
Yes.
Right, which is a clever idea. And with me, we didn't write it in. I just carried boxes and stood behind couches and things like that.
Wow, yeah.
But for me, it was a monster juggling act as a new mother to do a show and have these babies. What was your experience?
Yeah, well, the funny part in the beginning was that Carla, the character I played, started out before I was pregnant with four children.
Right.
So, and then I got pregnant and they said, oh, that's great. You know, that'll fit right into the character. And they found a way to get me pregnant in the show.
Right.
And then 2 years later, I was pregnant again. And they went, oh, really? You know, and the third time they just gave up and Carla had twins. I didn't have twins, but Carla. So I ended up with eight children.
Eight kids. Yeah. Did you know Gary Goldberg?
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
The wonderful Gary Goldberg.
Yes.
For our listeners who may not know, Gary created Family Ties. He also produced Spin City and Brooklyn Bridge, just a very important TV writer and producer. And he and his wife, Diana, were huge proponents of childcare.
Yes.
And they were at Paramount because they set up that whole daycare center on the lot.
I was part of that.
You were part of that.
Oh, Rhea. Yes. I was part of that.
Of course you were.
Daycare was the thing I was the most connected to at the time through an organization called LA's Best. That was an after school care. But the people who I met through that were, you know,
yeah,
talked about, we need to have childcare in the workplace. And so we figured we would start here, even though I had kids, Gary Goldberg had kids. It wasn't for my kids. I had childcare I could afford, and I could see my kids and it would be okay. But, you know, all the people who worked at Paramount, the hundreds and hundreds of people who came from Pacoima and, you know, who knows what place outside of LA, they're the ones who needed it, you know? So that's what it became.
Well, that's a real game changer. What a great thing you did. Wow. So what was it like for you as a pregnant woman on TV and then as a young mom to be working? What was that like for you? Because you and Danny were both working at the same time. So how did that work? Did you share responsibilities? What happened?
Well, I have to say that as far as working and being a mother and being on Cheers mm-hmm. for all those years and having the babies while I was on the show, mm-hmm. it was magical. it was a magical time. That they, everyone, that show was so cohesive as far as the people. Mm-hmm. There was so much love there. Mm-hmm. And all of us were around the same age. And even though, you know, most of them were men, their wives were having babies.
Right.
That there were a lot of babies born during the Cheers years.
So it was like a shared experience of the work itself. And then you were all sort of in the same boat from a relationship and family growing point of view.
Yeah. And we all had different issues, of course, with relationships and with our kids. Yeah. And then some of them were a little bit different in ages and stuff. But
of course,
as far as working, I was happy I was working. I didn't work that far from home. I worked at Paramount and I lived, you know, it was like a 15, 20 minute drive, right?
Yes.
I was living in. The kids were allowed to come down. Not all the time, but I had, a little room down at the bottom of the stage. And it was a lot of fun for them to come down just to see it, just to go to where the craft service thing was.
I know. Craft service is a huge thing for my boys because there would be junk food there. And it was like walking into a paradise as soon as they saw that card table set up with bowls of M&Ms.
Yes, yes. We had, besides the craft service table, we had the candy drawer.
They knew where that was.
And when after they were there, that had to be refilled. That's all.
I remember once somebody asked my son when he was young, and I can't remember who it was, but they said, "You go to work with your mommy. What is that like?" And he said, "They have really good raisins there." Oh, God. But you and Danny, did you share responsibilities as a parent?
Well, we were
during that time.
Yeah. I mean, I say this
because you were both working. That's why I asked the question.
Yeah. We did share responsibilities. Danny tried to be as involved as he could. And I always feel like I did more, but I don't know if he would say that. You know, I feel like, you know, I mean, how, of course, as the mother, there's no way for you not to do more.
Mm-hmm. I think as a woman, or at least speaking for myself, I feel pressure to kind of, what's the word? Lead the way as a parent to a certain extent, because you're the mother.
Right.
Right.
I definitely was the one who put together the bag that you carried around.
Sure.
And I knew what was in it and what had to be in it. And I knew one thing I did know that he was not that involved in was I knew, even as my kids were getting older when I was working, I knew where they were at every minute. I knew where they went after school. I knew where they were hanging out. I knew who they were with.
Yes.
It's like, to me, it was really important to know, even if I couldn't be the one who brought them to that house.
Yes. Yes.
You know, or pick them up from school that day.
Yes.
That I knew where they were and what they were doing. Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about what it's like? Because I'm just curious. What is it like witnessing your daughter become a mother? What is that experience for you as now a new grandmother?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the right word, but it's awe-inspiring. I'm in awe of my daughter being a mother. She's extremely natural at it. And she'd not grow up as a person who was like, oh, I can't wait to have a kid someday. I'm going to have seven. It wasn't until, because I would drop the hint every now and then. I tried not to bombard my kids with, you think you're ever going to have a baby? You know?
Right.
But I did say it every now and then. But when she decided to do it, she came to me and she said, Andy and I are trying. I was like, really? You know, really? And it was like something, you know, it was time. It was her time. It was a time. And it gave me so much faith that your children are going to do what they need to do when they need to do it. And to have faith in them.
I love that you say having faith in them.
Yeah.
It's beautiful parenting advice, actually.
Yeah.
I want to get back to you and Cheers because I saw that you said in an interview, you said that you likening yourself to Carla, and you said, we are both earthy and practical. We're survivors. And I was just curious, if you were practical and earthy in your 30s, I mean, are you now at age 75?
Well, I guess I feel more able to like to cut loose and to do what I want, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, since Danny and I are, we are married. I heard your introduction, of course.
Yeah.
We are still married and we are still very good friends and we see each other a lot.
Yes.
And our family is still the most important thing to both of us, I believe. He loves to work like you. Mm-hmm. I like to work.
Did age in your life, did getting older sort of shift your relationship to ambition?
You know, it's really weird when you think about it, because I've kept a lot of that under wraps.
Oh.
It's my insecurity, I think.
Oh, interesting.
I am a very insecure person, like go from shy to insecure. Yeah, I know it's not something that you'd always see, but like when I got the first part I got here, which seemed to me to come out of the blue, which was on a TV movie with Marielle Hemingway when she was 13 called I Want to Keep My Baby. It wasn't my baby, it was her baby. She wanted to keep her baby. And I was a social worker, you know, and I got cast in this and I was, wow, you know, and that made me more ambitious because I thought, oh, this is a possibility for me, a real possibility. But I don't think I would have ever given up my relationship for it. And I didn't, you know.
So you and Danny were married for however, well, you're still married, but you separated now. You're separated for how many, couple years now?
Oh, more. Like
more.
10, maybe.
Oh, wow.
I have no idea. Dates are not my thing. It could be 8. I don't know.
What's that like as an older person now being an individual away from a partner? Although I recognize that you have a really good relationship with him, so it's not like he's out of your life by any means.
But I'm not going to sugarcoat. It was difficult.
Uh-huh.
It was very difficult at first,
right?
You know, and there were a lot of reasons that we separated, which I'm not going to go into. But
of course not.
And it took time for us to come to this somehow pretty decent understanding.
Yes.
And relationship with each other.
I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a big shift for you and for him, no doubt. And mm-hmm. I think it's amazing that you've come to this. I don't know, this sort of, it sounds to me like you're pretty peaceful about it at this now.
Well, I am at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I live alone with my little dog, you know, who's my partner in life now. I don't like living alone.
Oh, you don't?
No, I like being alone. I like having time to myself. I love when I was living with Danny and the kids were all in college or whatever, if he went away to do something, went, oh, good, I have 2 weeks so I can do whatever I want, you know.
Right.
But when it's every day, it's not my favorite.
It's not your favorite. Would you like to have a partner? Would you like to find another partner?
Well, that's a hard question.
I mean, do you want me to set you up? Rhea, do you want me to set you up?
No.
You laugh, but.
Don't set me up.
Don't
unless it's someone really wonderful, rich and famous, gorgeous, and a lot younger than me.
Fine. I'm all over this. I'll get back to you in about 10 to 15 minutes.
Okay.
but yeah, maybe not. I hear what you're saying. I mean, you like the autonomy. And on the other hand, maybe does it feel a little lonely? I don't know.
It does. It feels a little lonely. When I have people over a lot, I have my family comes over a lot, you know, like one kid or the other. I mean, 3 kids. It's a lot of people. And I have a lot of company and very good friends. My sister lives very close by.
Oh, how nice.
But when everybody leaves after a great night, I go, ooh, where is everyone?
Oh, gosh.
You know, where is that person, you know, that we could just talk about how the night went, you know?
Yes, yes, yes. How do you deal with endings? I wanted to ask that. I know. Because that's a part of life, right? Not just, you know, shows ending, friends, family, dying. I mean,
you know what? I could cry right now just thinking about endings. I mean,
they're hard, right?
Yeah, they're hard. And it just feels so close when you know people. I mean, you start off knowing nobody. Well, I started off knowing nobody who had died. Maybe my grandfather was the first one. Mm-hmm. But now, of course, we've all had friends who have suffered awful illnesses and died, and they're no more. And it's really hard for me to ever put that in any context where it's okay. Mm-hmm. It's never really okay. Mm-hmm. It is like in my Zen meditative self, I understand that, as Thich Nhat Hanh says, I don't know if you know Thich Nhat.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
sort of.
He was a Vietnamese activist and became a great teacher, a meditation teacher of mindfulness meditation. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know him personally, but I read him a lot and watched all these videos that he was on YouTube. And he was a very, very peaceful person. Mm. And he says all the time, there really is no death, because we are pieces of the universe. And when we are no longer are human in our human bodies, we become other pieces of the universe.
Yeah.
In reality, like not just sort of an idea of it. We literally become other pieces of the universe. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe not the flesh, but the part of us that is us. Because what is us? Us is what's ever going on in our mind and our soul. We never know which is which.
Right.
Do we know what's coming from here and what's coming from here? I don't, you know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so I would find that really comforting when I thought about death. Because as a child, I was terrified of it. Not because I was surrounded by it, but because of the idea of it.
Right. Well, it's a mindful approach. And maybe then the question shouldn't be about endings, because really the way you're talking about it, and perhaps he was talking about it, is that it's not so much an ending as a shift.
I guess so. Yeah.
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 That actually chokes me up thinking about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shift and an acceptance of that shift.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I love that. I'm going to take that to heart. Okay, it's time to take a quick break. More with Rhea Perlman after this. Would you like to get even wiser, specifically about how to improve your health? Well, let us introduce you to the Zoe Science and Nutrition Podcast, a show brought to you by one of our previous sponsors, Zoe. As one listener and fan put it in her review, Zoe Science and Nutrition is a life-changing, science-based, myth-busting podcast that's a must-listen for anyone who eats food and wants to understand how it affects their body. If you're keen to learn what's fact and fiction in the latest health and nutrition research, then tune in to this podcast. You'll join millions of listeners hearing from world-leading scientists who share insights to improve your health. Find Zoe Science and Nutrition wherever you listen to podcasts and start getting wiser about your health today. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. So how's everyone's social battery holding up these days? Feeling a little overwhelmed, maybe? You know, it's all too easy to overlook our need to recharge, especially as we start to navigate more social engagements after winter. It's vital now more than ever to take a moment, step back, and truly assess how much socializing is healthy for us. It's about identifying which connections uplift us and which ones might be sapping our energy. Taking that step to prioritize our well-being and mental health helps make sure we're filling our social tanks with the right kind of fuel. That's where therapy comes in. A skilled therapist can guide you in developing and exercising the art of setting boundaries. This skill is essential in ensuring you don't overcommit and exhaust yourself, which nobody wants. Recognizing and respecting our limits is crucial. It helps us discover the type of social interactions that best suit us. If you're contemplating therapy, consider BetterHelp. It's incredibly convenient, adaptable, and seamlessly integrates into your busy schedule. Everything is online, allowing you to take therapy from the comfort of your home. Plus, starting is simple. Just complete a short questionnaire to be paired with a licensed therapist. And remember, you can switch therapists at any time without additional costs. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/wiser today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/wiser. If you're anything like me, you're probably planning to travel for a few weeks out of the year. It might be just for a few days, for a long weekend, or perhaps it's a couple of weeks away for a family reunion. Think about those times away and picture listing your space on Airbnb. It could be an opportunity for you to turn those situations into a practical and even profitable one. You might be thinking, my place couldn't be an Airbnb, but that's not true. If you're concerned about the time commitment, you could give it one try and see how it goes. It is a practical way to keep using the space even when you're not there. So if you're curious about hosting on Airbnb, find out how much your space could be worth or visit airbnb.com/host. It could be the start of a whole new chapter for your home. Go to airbnb.com/host. I want to ask you a couple of quick little questions, if I could.
Okay.
Is there something you'd go back and tell yourself at 21?
I would tell myself to relax. Just frickin' take a load off, man, because, you know, accept it as it comes.
Amen.
The thing that somebody once said to me is, you never know what's around the corner.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I would tell myself at 21.
Yeah.
You know, things don't stop at this street. You never know what's around the corner. Sometimes sounds like it's going to be something bad, but it could be something great.
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay. That's a great one. Relax. Is there something you would go back in your life and say yes to?
Ooh.
Yeah.
You're asking too many good questions here.
I'm sorry about that.
There are so many things I would go back to in my life and do a different way because I know what it is now.
Uh-huh.
Like there was a show I did called Pearl. It was on for one season.
Yes.
It came from an idea I had.
Yes.
And it was written and produced by people that I was not very close with, but seemed like they would do a good job. Mm-hmm. And they're very competent people. But I did not have a team. I didn't have a partner in that. So when things were not going right for me, for the show, which I felt, this is my show. I have to make it go right. And I had great people in it. Malcolm McDowell was in it.
Wow.
And Carol Kane and all kinds of really good actors. And it's a sitcom.
Yeah.
This is just kind of a businessy thing. I think that to be a successful producer, creator, you have to have a team of people on your side who are going to back you up all the time. You can't do it yourself.
Right.
That's, you're not respected enough. No one is.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's interesting. So you would have redone the team slightly or put somebody in.
Yeah. I would have redone the team
and made sure
I had the right people because those people might've been the talented people, but they may not have been the right people for this show.
Got it. And you, it sounds like you had an instinct that you didn't quite follow.
Yes, and didn't really know how to, you know, after a certain point. I worked so hard at getting this show done.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, and then I would, when I wasn't being backed up by the network or the producers, I'd be on the phone calling TV critics, myself, just blabbing to TV critics, just like, I don't think anybody does that.
No, I think you needed somebody to tell you not to do that. I wish I could have helped you.
I should have called you.
You should have called me.
God damn it.
Is there something that you wish you'd spent less time on in your life?
Oh, on ragging on myself. I just wish I'd spent less time questioning myself all the time.
That's unbelievable to hear. I was going to ask you earlier, when you were younger, did you like your own body?
No.
You did not. See, now this is so amazing. And how do you feel about your body now?
No.
Really?
I had a period of feeling good about my body.
Oh.
When I was younger, when I was a kid, I was a skinny, skinny kid. Mm-hmm. I just felt like I really didn't have a body. I was not athletic. I wasn't, you know, good in gym. I didn't do anything like that. And then as I got older, first I went to yoga, and then I started to really, really enjoy working out and exercise in many different ways. And then I felt like my body was really in great shape, and it's been in pretty good shape.
Well, so now you're now I think you do like your body. I think it sounds like you do.
Well, but now it's got like, I was so flexible up to a few years ago, and now it's like, why can't I do that anymore?
But are you still doing yoga?
Yes. But because of the pandemic, I'm doing it on my own to an app.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. So it's not as intense. Although Gracie became a yoga teacher.
Oh.
And so when she was available to give me classes, that was always great.
Well, I just want to go on the record saying, you know, as I was rewatching episodes of Cheers and other work that you've done, like Matilda and so on, you had an amazing body. And I still think you have an amazing body. Very fit, very spry. No, really, I'm not kidding.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
I'll tell you what isn't amazing that I really want to do something about, but is like my skin. What happens to your skin? It gets crinkly.
It gets crinkly.
It's like, what is that? Why? I mean, it doesn't matter how many arm exercises I do. My muscles are good, but my skin that's covering those muscles are like, go away.
Don't rag on it. I'm giving you your advice that you wish you'd given to yourself.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's not something that haunts me.
Good.
Yeah.
And what do you want me to know about aging?
I don't like it. I'm not going to say a lot of good things about aging. I mean, there's so many things I don't like about aging.
All right. Fine.
I don't know.
So I'll prepare myself not to like it or prepare myself. I mean, we're all aging, needless to say. But anyway, that's very funny. But can you tell me something that you're looking forward to, Rhea?
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to every stage of my granddaughter's life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really am. And I used to only be looking forward to things like traveling, mm-hmm. which is still something I'm looking forward to. But I put on hold for quite a while because of the pandemic. And now this, and yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to most. And maybe other grandchildren. Who knows?
Imagine that.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a blessing.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You're a blessing, Rhea Perlman.
You're a blessing too. We can be a group called the Blessings.
That's fine with me. I love that idea.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you everything possibly wonderful and excellent. Thank you for talking to me. This has been the best conversation, and I adore you.
Oh, thank you, Julia. Okay. Have a good one. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Well, how much fun was that? There is so much to tell my mom here. All right. Time to jump on the Zoom with my mom. Mommy.
Hi, honey.
So, Mom, I have this conversation with Rhea Perlman, who is utterly charming, by the way. You would love her.
Oh, I love her from afar.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of takeaways from the conversation, but one of the questions that I asked her was, is there something that you'd go back and tell yourself at 21? And you know what she said?
Mm-hmm.
Relax.
Oh, I think it is terrific.
Yeah, I do too.
However, can I say one thing?
Yeah.
Try to tell a 21-year-old to relax.
I know, exactly.
I mean, in other words, you know, you look back and you think, oh, I was so tense. I worked too hard. I did too much. But try to go back and stop yourself from doing that when you did it. Was that possible?
No, I guess it's not possible. So I guess that was a shit answer she gave us. But I hear what you're saying. No, no, no. I know what you mean, because there's a kind of fervor that you have at 21 that's undeniable. And I guess it propels you to this moment now. She's 75, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, she's a kid. She's nothing.
She's a spring chicken.
Exactly. My God, she can be doing cartwheels tomorrow. The thing I want to say is said youth is wasted on the young. When you're young, you're on the make.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a crude way to say it, but it feels so true you wish you could have the wisdom. You wish you could have stood back a little bit and had some perspective. But boy, the hormones are just thrusting you out there.
Yeah, totally. It's a very good point. The other thing, I asked her about endings, to talk about endings and what they're like for her. And by endings, I meant shows ending, family members, friends dying, marriages ending, endings generally that can have multiple meanings. First of all, it was so visceral because she was like, oh, they're so hard. I really felt like she meant it. And of course they are hard. They're inherently impossible. Mm-hmm. But then she starts talking about, she does a lot of mindfulness work.
Mm-hmm.
And she was talking about that Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh.
Yeah.
You know him?
Yep.
Yeah, I didn't. I pretended like I did.
I know. I wish I did, but I have his books. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I never knew him.
No, no, I know. But you know of him is what I mean. Right. I did not know of him as she said it. And I had this moment of like, do I say I know? Do I not? I kind of lied and it was obvious. Anyway, whatever. And she was talking about how he says that they're, and I'm probably going to butcher this, but they're not like endings, they're transitions or changes, that you're still of this earth, not necessarily in a flesh sense, but you are still of this earth. I found that so touching. And she was talking about how hard they were for her, these endings, but while at the same time saying this, and I thought, oh, well, it sounds like you've got your head wrapped around endings in a pretty significant way. Anyway, I thought that was interesting as hell.
Oh, I think that's very interesting that you think of her and her work, and then you think of Thich Nhat Hanh, this monk in Plum Valley. And isn't it amazing that these two came together, that the mind and the ideas came together?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a miracle in itself.
Isn't that funny that his brain working on this connected with her brain, this actress on Cheers, and then,
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but I'm so happy to hear that. I mean, I think that's it's very touching, and I think it's absolutely wonderful. When I had a fall, I had a bad fall, I was walking, and I had these wrong size shoes on, it doesn't matter. But the fact of the matter is that afterwards I was thinking, I can't fall. And so Thich Nhat Hanh has a thing, and he says, he's a big walking meditator. And he says, walk as if your feet are kissing the earth. And so I tell you, that's a little thing that has stuck with me when I walk. In other words, cheat my mind, my mindfulness in my feet. Don't get distracted and think about other things. So anyway, he speaks to lots of things.
Mom, what are you talking about? You had the wrong size shoes on.
Well, they were shoes that had the, the sole sort of stuck out a little bit. Well, no, it stuck out from the, I can't tell you why I fell. I mean, I don't know, but I was walking fast and I was on Wisconsin Avenue and down I went. And when I started to fall, I thought to myself, I'm falling. And I fell. And then, people came quickly and said, oh, are you all right? Are you all right? And I told you this. And then I said, and I had to kind of check everything out. And I said, yeah, I'm okay. My watch was going wah, wah, wah. And so I put my arm up and I said, I can't see my watch, but I think it's trying to call 911. And so I said, could somebody cancel it? And so somebody came and canceled the little thing. And so I said, okay, now I'm fine. So then I was able to get up and walk away. I was so glad that the watch got calmed down.
Yeah, that's incredible that happened, but I'm still not exactly sure what these shoes are, that you were talking about. They don't fit you. Don't wear them anymore, right?
No, I gave them away immediately to, I want to say, to the needy. No.
Oh, no, I think we're going to have to cut that out. Oh. Perfect. Okay. The needy. Mom, seriously, what are we in the middle of, a Dickens novel?
I gave them away to people who had bigger feet than I do.
Okay. Maybe that's a better way to phrase it. Okay. Well, anyway, I think that's perfect. Okay, Mommy. Well, I think that's good. I think we've had our good recap.
I think we have too, love. And thank you for being in touch with me. And thank you for being in touch with Rhea.
Okay. Love you, Mama. And I'll talk to you later. Okay. I'll call you later and blah, blah, blah. Okay. Love you. Love you.
Okay. Love you. Love you. Bye.
Bye, Mommy. Bye. Do you know how to turn it off?
It's down here. Go to.
Okay. So there's a button that says leave.
I know. See it? But it's not on here.
Okay, move your mouse down.
No, it's on here. It's on this one down here. It's way down there. There you go. Leave. And now leave.
Okay.
And now I'm swinging.
Okay, bye, Mom. There's more Wiser Than Me with Lemonada Premium. Subscribers get exclusive access to bonus content. Subscribe now in Apple Podcasts. Wiser Than Me is a production of Lemonada Media, created and hosted by me, Julia Louis-Dreyfus. The show is produced by Chrissy Pease, Alex McCohen, and Oha Lopez. Brad Hall is a consulting producer. Our senior editor is Tracy Clayton. Rachel Neal is our Senior Director of New Content, and our VP of Weekly Production is Steve Nelson. Executive producers are Stephanie Whittles-Wax, Jessica Cordova Kramer, Paula Kaplan, and me. The show is mixed by Kat Yore and Johnny Vince Evans, and music by Henry Hall, who has a new single out called Suddenly a Kiss. You can find it on Spotify or wherever you listen to your music. Special thanks to Charlotte Cohen Sunderland, Will Schlegel, and of course my mom, Judith Bowles. Follow Wiser Than Me wherever you get your podcasts. And hey, if there's an old lady in your life, listen up. This episode of Wiser Than Me is brought to you by Maker's Mark. Maker's Mark makes their bourbon carefully, so please enjoy it that way. Maker's Mark Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey, 45% alcohol by volume. Copyright 2024 Maker's Mark Distillery, Incorporated, Loretto, Kentucky.
Hey, Wiser Than Me listeners. We want to hear from you. By just answering a few questions on our listener survey, you can share feedback about show content you'd like to see in the future and help us think about what brands would serve you best. And even better, once you've completed the survey, you can enter for a chance to win a $100 Visa gift card. The survey is short and sweet and will help us play ads you don't want to skip and keep bringing you content you love. Just go to lemonadamedia.com/survey. lemonadamedia.com/survey.